All right. Why don't you, we've never met before, so why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, it's quite surprising.
Oh, you just broke up.
It's quite surprising that you meet these strangers. oh, yeah, there you go.
Why not?
Hope I'm not breaking up too much. I'm not sure about the quality of the transmission here.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll talk a little bit myself. Yeah, I wrote a little snippet here about who I am. Well, I currently live in Montreal, Canada, and I've been here like all my life. So the French part of Canada, right near where Jonathan Peugeot lives as well. And so I grew up with Korean parents. So you talk a lot about the Korean revival, and it really relates to me because, the legacy of that, of the revival, you know, affects me as well. And so, you know, obviously my parents have a Presbyterian background, mm-hmm. and I currently attend a Pentecostal church. Mm-hmm. I used to attend Korean Presbyterian churches here in Montreal. I switched around quite a couple of times with my family, and then my parents had enough of all the Korean Presbyterian like
drama.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, oh, you know what, for your sake we're gonna go to a Pentecost, like a English church or white people church, we would call it,
a white people church.
And now I'm at this Pentecostal church in Montreal, a pretty big one. I think it's the biggest one in the Montreal area. Okay. Mind you that, you know, Montreal is a highly secular, like Quebec itself is a very highly secular province. Like, I don't know if you knew about that. And so like, obviously I grew up within like a socially liberal, frame, like mm-hmm. a paradigm. Mm-hmm. And, just into like, just thinking about who I am, I'm trying to be very honest. I guess I hate to associate socially liberal to sexually immoral as well. Mm-hmm. And I think I was plagued by that sort of thinking a lot. Mm-hmm. And so, like, don't mind, you can ask questions as we're going, because I just wrote about a page and a half of snippet here.
Okay.
I don't know if it's going to be enough to cover the whole hour, but
We'll have no problem with the hour, trust me. Seldom is there a problem with an hour.
Seldom is there a problem. And so there's something about that. In my mind, I still associate social liberal with
sexually libertine, probably those two.
Sexually libertine,
because they often, well, in the course of the sexual revolution, that was a very pretty tight association. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right in challenging it, because obviously in the United States, in terms of our politics, we had the Barack Obama, the Democrat, lived like almost like a Puritan, except for his smoking, which his wife wanted him to stop. And now we've got Donald Trump, who appeals to the conservatives. Libertine is a good word for him.
Okay.
So you're right in terms of challenging those facile relationships. So
And so I'm gonna start, like, I'm not gonna talk about my whole 23 years of living, but I'm gonna talk about the
You were worried about filling the hour?
I was reflecting upon what's more important according to my current journey with Jordan Peterson and in the church.
Okay.
And how I could bring Jordan Peterson within the church framework, and how I've been working towards that kind of mindset. Okay. And so I think my journey starts with the journey of chaos, obviously, of depravity, of some sort of destruction in my life.
Okay.
And about a year and a half ago, I went through an episode of death anxiety. And so I don't know if, have you dealt a lot with people?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So death anxiety is when, okay. Yeah. So I guess it's just like a huge, huge dread, a huge like fear of death. Mm-hmm. It's also very tough to talk about, because it's such a strong thought in your head that you're afraid that if you speak of it, with someone else, they might catch it as well. And because it's such a dominant, because it's such a dominant thought in your mind. Like, so I was just keep thinking about death. Like, I'm just a statistic. I have a 0.00 somewhat percent of dying every single year. And even though I, which is silly, even though I grew up with a faith, my naturalistic frame of work wouldn't allow me to actually believe in an afterlife, right? The resurrection of the body.
Yeah.
So it's a very hard concept to talk about because it's still the unknown. We can't empirically say what happens after death, right? It's still a great unknown. It's a dragon of chaos, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so it comes with great depression. Like, most of the time I would feel like there was a great big hole in my chest, and there was better days and there's worse days. And so this period almost lasted a year, and it gradually went down. November 2017 was the start date, I think. It was an on and off thing, and then boom, I broke up with my then girlfriend, and you know, just the chaos flooded in like that, and mm-hmm. and so it kind of possessed me. It held me, and about for a whole year, and it's also associated with crazy dreams. So I don't think it's a symptom, but when you're drowning in chaos, I think the only thing that could happen would be like terrible dreams. You know, like terrible dreams is something that probably happens quite often for people that are drowning in chaos. And so there's this great chaos in my life. And from that point, November 2017 to today, I've had about four apocalyptic dreams, like very lucid apocalyptic dreams. And you know, I've talked about this with Christian counselors, and you know, no one really gives me a solid answer. You know, it's just, I really don't know what to do about it. But there were messages within these dreams. Okay. First one was probably associated with like I probably should have broken up with my non-believing girlfriend sooner, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, and I also had a hypnagogic hallucination. So that's one where I wake up and I'm still in dream state, and things around me still appear as if they're hallucinating or something. So this chair that I'm actually sitting on was actually a little girl in my room. And so I got up and I shook the chair. And once I felt the fabric within my hands, I was like, this is a chair. And the girl quickly turned into a chair. And I was like, my heartbeat was racing so hard. And so when I think about these episodes, like I want to tell these episodes because I was listening to the podcast of the guy involved in cults, and he saw a being of light.
Yep.
And I was like, I resonate with that so much because it's experiences that are very closely linked to what I've experienced. Like, I'm pretty sure that might happen to me at any moment.
Hmm.
Yeah. And which is interesting for me because whenever I feel like, and I'm being very evangelical here, I understand. I don't know if this is,
that's okay. Like, just say what you think.
Yeah. And you could, interject at any moment. I feel like, whenever I feel God's presence the closest, mm-hmm. like a powerful, purifying presence, right? A holy presence. Mm-hmm. I shy away from it because I'm so afraid of his presence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of friends in my entourage, right? Christian friends. I've made Christian friends since then, ever since I switched into a Pentecostal background. Like very charismatic friends are like, if you truly, and it's a struggle, and if you truly are acceptant of God's grace, like that shouldn't happen. It's an interesting thing. Like she didn't say it in a.
That's what she said. That was her judgment on what you just told me about being scared or being a little reluctant with respect to God's sensing God's, the strength of God's presence.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. That's her judgment. Yep. She never says things in a condemning way. Mm-hmm. She says it in a manner to be helpful. And I'm like, okay, I understand.
That was her evaluation of it. Well, it's valuation judgment, but yep. I'm tracking. Keep going.
Okay. Okay. Great. Cause I've been listening to you for a long time and I know you're a very smart guy and you have a lot of experience. So I'm not afraid of you losing track of whatever I'm about to say. And then, so death anxiety, right? We're back at the death anxiety. There's a lot of chaos in my life, right? And I got into, and so I started investigating near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so near-death experiences are like just people that died of heart attack or like brain dead, presumably, and experience something on the other side. Because it's an obvious track from where I was. Like, I'm afraid of dying, so I have to, verify it within a rather empirical frame of work if the afterlife exists. And that experience really shook, like investigating those experiences shook a little bit of whatever, like a little dent was caused by it within my naturalistic frame of work. And I was like, okay, I could accept that. And so this supernatural kind of slowly flooded, came in, could come into my life. I'm actually reading Miracles right now in the first few chapters of C.S. Lewis's Miracles and how they're talking about the difference between natural and the supernatural. And I'm like, that's sort of what happened. Like I'm breaking the shell of naturalism, right? Of materialism in my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm letting sort of, I guess, God's presence fill into my life. Mm-hmm. So, but I wasn't seeing it initially. Mm-hmm. And so, let me check. So I was investigating paranormal activities as well. And then I started reading. I never actually read. I was a typical Asian boy playing my video games. I think I'm relatively good at school. So like I'm currently studying civil engineering. I'm finishing my bachelor's degree.
Okay.
And it was an easy ride for me. But, you know, as we know, easy is not the way to go. It's you have to carry a burden. Yeah. And, you know, I associate some of my fall into chaos because I took life with such a great level of flippancy. Like, it didn't matter to me. I was like, video game, like drinking, clubbing, like it just didn't matter to me, right? Mm-hmm. And it changed within the year and a half now. With the near-death experience, I really enjoy this chaotic episode of my life. I'm grateful for it because, or not, I wouldn't be feeling so much of God's providence today, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm getting to the Jordan Peterson part.
You're doing fine.
Yeah, thank you. So throughout this time, I was talking to my evangelical buddies, my Pentecostal buddies, my student pastor, my young adults and youth pastor. He does a really good job. He's a very open person and very agreeable, and he really has a gift of being a good pastor. And I was, during this time, I was like wondering if I should stay in the church, because like all these near-death experiences don't actually relate to Jesus. Some of them do, but some of them meet Buddha, and I'm like, what's happening here? If this is the one true religion, shouldn't they all meet Jesus?
Now you're talking about near-death experiences that you've been reading about.
I've been reading about, exactly.
Not near-death experiences. Now you're not having multiple near-death experiences.
No, I'm not repeatedly dying and coming back to life.
Okay. Just wanted to be clear.
Yeah. He just kept me in the church, and I still had to battle with these highly Christianese terms, right? Like giving yourself up and all these sorts of lingo, and I'm like, and the Holy Spirit, that's something I struggled with deeply initially. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what best to cure my doubt about my faith than to read apologetics? So I delved deep into Rabbi Zacharias' books. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually interested to think about what you think about those evangelical apologetics books, but we'll talk about that later if we have time. And then C.S. Lewis, actually. I started reading Mere Christianity, and this is about 3 months before I started reading 12 Rules. And so I started with Mere Christianity, and I like, wow, this guy, very smart guy, right? And I'm like, he's sort of explaining what the Holy Spirit is, and I'm struggling with this. And as you know, the Pentecostals are really strong in talking about the presence of God. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. Yeah. I could sort of make something of it with my background in quantum physics, and like how like everything's a wave, everything's a presence in the form, but in a wave-like form. So like, okay, that could be a spirit, right? And I'm like, okay. And then C.S. Lewis explains what it is. It's when you're fleshing out Christ-likeness or something like that. I'm paraphrasing terribly, and I have to be really careful with my words because I haven't read Mere Christianity in a long time. Okay. So fleshing out, being less of yourself and being more of Christ. Okay, I get that. But it's hard to let go of my naturalistic presuppositions. Oh, it's hard to let go my sexual libertineness, right? Yes, it's hard to let go. And it's a pride within. And I discovered how deadly pride is. Yeah. And like, and then pride, just let go of pride, that demon pride. And I always struggle with it, right? And I love how C.S. Lewis talks about how like the pride is the king demon. It's the one that comes before all, right? You need pride for lust, you need pride for gluttony, you need pride for every sin, and you just need to think that your will is better than God's, you know best. It's just like, I'm like, and I struggle with this every day, because obviously, and I associate this with my Korean background, Koreans are very prideful people.
Yes.
Pride is extremely prideful people, and it came down on me. And like, my dad has a very like short temper, and I had one too. And I'm trying to battle it so bad every day. And so, and I started reading Soren Kierkegaard, and it's like, yeah, you're a naturalist. Well, within any axiom, you can find yourself regretting the actions that you do, right? Like, you will eventually even regret committing your own suicide, like committing, like you'll regret, you know, getting married to this girl, like just, I mean, and I'm paraphrasing, I think it's just let go, just let the Spirit of God take hold of you, you know? And that's when the shell started breaking. And mm-hmm. So, and then I started listening to Ben Shapiro. Hmm. And so before Jordan Peterson. And so I would watch these videos of Ben Shapiro because I would associate my chaos with social, like the social liberal frame that I would live in, especially in Montreal and like a metropolitan city. And like, I was like hating on whatever I used to hold. Like, I was hating who I was, like the sexual morality in my life, all these like things that I would do that came up to it. And I'm like, I just used to, I hated it so much. And so Ben Shapiro was my gateway drug to that. I was like, he's like, oh, this guy is on media and he's telling all these things that I don't like that, finding things for me to accuse. And I realized it's not a great thing. I realized, you know, it's don't blame the world for your sins, you know? And that's where I stand now. But back then I was very happy that I found Ben Shapiro. And then I would see like Jordan Peterson in the equation. And I'm like, okay, this guy talks about Christ. Okay. But he's not very, he doesn't use Christianese terms. He's probably a charlatan. Like, he's probably like a snake oil salesman. He's just like using Christianity for his own benefit to go to get on this show. Hmm. And so I paused on Jordan Peterson for a bit. And I kept reading more Ravi Zacharias books. Mm-hmm. And during the summer of 2018, I took a swing at 12 Rules. Mm-hmm. And I started reading 12 Rules. And I saw the parallels that Jordan Peterson has with C.S. Lewis. And I know you emphasize that a lot, and I saw it like straight away. Yeah. His relationship with consciousness, I took a great interest in consciousness, right? So because if you want to live after life, the only thing that actually matters is your consciousness, right? And so he takes a big emphasis on consciousness, and I realized that. I'm like, okay, yeah, this guy might have something. And finished 12 Rules, and like 12 Rules really put the framework of like how to, within a rather materialistic frame, yep, of work, right? Evolutionary frame of work.
Yep.
Flesh out the commandments of Christ, right? The biblical principles.
Yeah.
And it was really helpful. But now from that frame of work, I'm trying to work towards like how to work out my spiritual life, right? Mm-hmm. And it could, I think it might occupy the same space, right? We talk a lot about superposition in quantum physics, and like, you know, some things might be superpositioning, right? So like this, the psyche and the spirit, right? It might superposition, like at a certain point, like, and yeah, I mean, that's where I'm at, and like I'm on the Jordan Peterson train full on right now. I listen to like all these things, but at the same time, I use it to help my spiritual life. I use it like through him.
Yeah.
You know, these biblical principles are passed down to me, and I can understand them.
Yeah.
And I'm able to live like a better Christian life, a spiritual life that's better than it was before. Mm-hmm. And now I'm reading, I'm writing, all thanks to him. All thanks to, yeah, Jordan Peterson. All of like, because it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then he gives also an understanding of what the Holy Spirit might be as well. Like the Spirit, like in that video, I think, I don't know who he did this interview with, but when he was asked about if he believes in God, and I believe that he does. I believe that he does. He does believe in God. I think he has enough in him to be, and I'm thinking about it in the Great Divorce frame of work. If Jordan Peterson comes up to Refrigerium, right? Comes up to Refrigerium, right?
Oh, yeah.
Keep going. Yeah. If Jordan Peterson comes up to Refrigerium, I think he'd be able to bow his head down and accept Christ as a savior in this afterlife. And I think that's the point of understanding God's saving grace, is that you just have to bow down. But it's the pride that you have, the devil, right? The pride is devil, right? Lucifer, Morningstar, right? He's the highest, and he fell to the lowest point. It's because of pride, right? Because it represents pride, and you have to let that go.
Yeah.
You just have to let that go. Yeah. And you could feel the full embrace of the Lord. Right. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's where I'm at right now. And I'm in constant conversation with these great friends of mine. Like this one friend of mine, I'm going to name drop her, Crystal. She's, because she's an important part right now. And Crystal is really helping me out with, because her knowledge of, like, she's one of those evangelicals. She used to work for the Salvation Army, and she knows like all these Bible verses by heart. And like, I'm still new to it because I only start like actually reading, and this is where I'm at with my faith. I've actually only started reading the Bible about a year ago around this time. And I'm right now at Deuteronomy. I finished the whole New Testament, and then I'm at Deuteronomy now. And okay. So this is where I'm at. And it's all thanks to, you know, just read, just sacrifice your time. Stop playing the video game.
Yeah.
And sacrifice your time.
Yeah.
to better understanding of God and yeah. And just like that's what Jordan Peterson has done to me.
Wow.
And God's grace, I guess. God's grace.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. That's really wonderful.
Yeah.
That's really wonderful. So why talk to me?
Why talk to you? Well, I found you. And you're the I want to know more about this because you talk about like ecumenical conversations, right? Yep. We need to have these conversations because our angles are so finite. And like, I mean, you're a man of significant intelligence as well and experience as well. And I can't find that in my entourage, especially now.
Yeah.
And that's why I was like, I'm going to use another evangelical term. And I like to preface everything that I say that are evangelical for your listeners, if we're ever going to upload this, like that I feel called, kind of felt called to have a conversation with you so that I could have a better understanding of someone that understands the Christian framework and understands Jordan Peterson's framework and how that those two plays together.
At least still trying to work on understanding them. It's
it's a
continual process. But it sounds like you are, I mean, it sounds to me like you've been reading the right books, like you have good people around you.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds to me like you've really been blessed through all of this.
That's God's providence. Like I was just thinking about yesterday. I was talking on Easter Sunday to my Korean pastor, the one I used to go to before. I go there because my grandparents still go to that church, and I like to have Easter and Sunday, and Easter and Christmas service with them. Mm-hmm. And we always talk about these things because he has a Presbyterian background, and he loves talking about John Wesley and Calvin, and like it's just like your typical Reformed pastor, right? And we were talking about I've never heard about this exactly, but I know that the revival happens in some time in the 20th century, but I didn't know it was before the Japanese occupation.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah. 1907. It started in 1907.
Interesting. Apparently.
The revival started in Pyongyang, North Korea, current day North Korea.
Really?
Yeah. And he actually, and so this pastor, like one of the first Presbyterian Korean pastors, was holding this huge conference outdoors, I guess, or indoors. I don't know, but that's how I'm picturing right now. And he started a sermon, and he stopped in the middle of his sermon because there was something in his heart that he had to say. He had to confess something. And apparently he wasn't honest, or he stole from someone, and that he didn't like this, this or that person in the congregation, and he just started confessing, right? And one by one, you know, his like in tears, right? He was starting to confess, and one by one, people start to confess, one by one, confessing, repenting their sins to God. And then it was supposed to be like a 5-day, like a revival, like a 5-day Christian, like a revival conference sort of thing, a meeting. And it turned like the 5 days turned to 10 days, and the 10 days turned to even more, like 15 days. And they're supposed to, you know, like worship the Lord from 7 to 10, but they went 7 to the early hours of the morning. And they just like every day they start praising the Lord. And that's one of the first revivals that happened in Korea. But the main point is that like that was God's providence. God gave grace there because in 1910, that's when the Japanese came in.
Yeah.
Right. And started using their women as sex slaves and like all those things. And like, and he was just talking about this, and I was like, wow, that's surely God's providence.
Have you read any books on the Korean revival?
No, I have not. I have not a single book.
See, yet. I've been lately. So my daughter, a couple of years ago, my daughter introduced my wife and I to the Korean drama Secret Garden, which we absolutely loved. And okay. then we watched a few others, which you didn't like so much. And then we watched Mr. Sunshine on Netflix. That's on, and we really loved that. And so my wife and I have been watching, you know, some of these Korean dramas. And it's, you know, there, as a Christian Reformed pastor in California, there are a number of, one-tenth of the Christian Reformed Church is Korean. And so I, and a lot of them are on the coasts, and most of them are in California. I'm a synodical deputy, so I often have to go down to, we have two Korean language classes, and so I have to perform some functions at those classes sometimes, and we have Korean churches in our classes. And so I've been quite, all the way back to my seminary days, the guy on the other side of the study carol where I was, he was a Korean graduate student, and I would help him with his English sometimes and going over his papers. And so I've always had an interest in the Korean culture. And so then lately we've been watching these Korean dramas, and it's been so fascinating. Lately we've been watching one about some office, the people in an office. And I've just been fascinated by the culture, and in terms of issues of status, pride, of showing, you know, of hierarchy and age. And of course, because I don't know the Korean language, if I knew the Korean language, I'm sure it would be far more vivid.
Oh yeah.
Catch whispers of it in translation, but it's so, and so lately I've been quite fascinated by the period, the run-up to World War II, the expansion of the Japanese Empire, what that did to Korea. And, I mean, that whole episode set in motion so much in Asia. Then, of course, this Korean revival, which, you know, when you think about it, this has completely changed the history of a good segment of Christianity. And it's been Korean missionaries that have been going out all over the world planting churches, but then here in the United States, you know, working with the Korean churches and whatnot, it's amazing how, so the Korean churches come in and they're very, you know, they've got their program, they're very determined, they're, you know, they've got their prayer services early in the morning, and of course the pastor is running everything, and they're running their pastors ragged. And then the second generation who, you know, and then just, and I'm just, you know, we continue to watch this, and it's just really interesting. And so your story for me is so fascinating, because obviously a lot of the first generation and 1.5 generation are very concerned about the second generation who are leaving the church.
Honestly.
And so your story for me is just simply fascinating.
Yeah, because and this is my current analysis about second generations, is that there are some, I think the Korean churches in North America have a place more of a cultural hub, like a community center for Koreans to meet on Sundays. And to have like to just socialize, right? And I think that's, I hate to say, with my very I guess adolescent view of it, like it's not refined at all, but I think that was the issue with me. It's because I would go to Sunday, be in choir, right? We're talking about my Presbyterian background, you know, very, you know, a huge liturgy. I loved choir, right? Because I have musical talents, and I used to play the piano. And once I got to choir, like, I was the only male that knew how to sing pitch among like about when I left, I was the only male that could sing pitch. So I sang bass, but the night before, right? I'm not blaming the circumstances for my sins, but the night before, I went after our partying, actually. So I would go clubbing from 3, and then 3 to 5, I would be partying, and then I would go to church in the morning.
Wow.
Well, I would never do that now, because I'm a changed man.
But that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
And I mean, what's so again, part of, for me, the fascination. So part of the reason that the Koreans fell in so easily in the Christian Reformed Church is because 100 years ago or so, plus 120 years ago, 130 years ago, the Dutch, of course, came to America as immigrants. And, you know, when they came to America, it was a very different America. And, but they were very insular. They kept their own language. They really tried to keep to the Dutch language until World War One forced them to stop because everyone was confusing them with Germans. And of course, you know, even Christian Reformed churches started getting burned down because people thought they were Germans. It's like, no, we're Dutch. We're Dutch. We're not German. I swear. But they could, you know, their English wasn't so good. So yeah, you know, you have all this stuff going on. And but all of these immigrant dynamics, just as you said, the church becomes this cultural center. And people who didn't necessarily go to church in the Netherlands, when they immigrated to America, they started going to church. Because, well, there you're speaking your Dutch language, and there you've got your culture and your traditions, and you're with people that you're familiar with. It's this immigration buffer. But now, late 20th and early 21st century North America, including Montreal, this is a far more invasive secular context than the 1890s Western Michigan or Eastern Massachusetts that my grandparents went to. So the cultural dynamics just are all intensified. And the Dutch are in a sense kind of like the Korean, because the Dutch, they're a little country. They've got the English, they've got the French, they've got the Germans, they've got the North Sea. And, you know, so kind of one seminary professor who wasn't Dutch or Korean once said, you know, the Koreans are the only other people besides the Dutch that when they walk into a room, they think they're a majority. And I thought, it's these smaller countries in the midst of much larger neighbors where there's, you know, so the Dutch really didn't have a nation. They were, I mean, the Dutch fought their independence against the Spanish. And so there's all these interesting parallels between the Dutch and the Koreans. And it's so interesting that these things are all very down deep into the culture. And of course the Frisians, which is part of my heritage too, they not only killed, but ate Christian missionaries. So the Frisians got that on their record. But I've just been fascinated watching and learning about Korean culture, this Korean immigration journey, and also how this is playing out in the church. And your story is so fascinating because you've both got the Korean Presbyterian story, but then also your parents making a very non-communitarian move in terms, we're going to go to the white Pentecostal church, which makes a lot of sense given, I mean, people look at Korean Presbyterians but Korean culture is very emotional culture, very passionate culture. And so, you know, a Pentecostal church within a North American frame of reference makes a lot of sense. But then, of course, you're just a kid and you're coming through this stuff. So I find your story fascinating and the transparency and honesty with which you tell it. I think it's just amazing, and I'm just blown away. That's just amazing. I love your story and the spirit with which you have addressed it. And I think it's going to be really exciting what God does with you and through you. I mean, He's clearly been working in your life, and He's surrounded you with good mentors and pastors and friends. But at the same time, you're not living in a cocoon. You're working through the issues. You're doing the hard work. And that's really important, because this isolationist strategy that churches and cultures, I mean, cultures adopt, and the CRC did this for years. And I very much understand the blessings and wisdom of it, because you do protect people. But at some point, stuff breaks down, and once those walls are gone and you're in the culture, you're going to have to do some hard work, and it's clear you've been doing that hard work. I mean, you've been thinking, you've been reading, you've been praying. You haven't abandoned the church. You haven't abandoned your Christian friendships. You've got a capacity to not simply jettison evangelical language and practice, but rather to, okay, well, let's take a look at it, and let's critique it, and I think that's very wise and important, because, you know, I have one of the little mottos I have is ontology is its own justification. And what I mean by that is that evangelical language developed and served and was highly functional for a very long time in very powerful ways. So at this point in time, especially like with Jordan Peterson at Liberty University, it's helpful to critique it, but don't just, you know, to be immature is to say, you know, you're just going to be flippant and be hasty with things. And Lewis is a great guide in that, and so is Treebeard. It's like, okay, so we've got this conflict. Well, let's not get anxious. Let's not get panicky. Let's take some time. Let's trust God. Let's look for good mentors. Let's start to work through these things. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you've been doing. So good for you.
Well, I appreciate the compliment. I actually have something else to quickly talk about. Like for me, it's like, what's your current standing with like miracles and like the gifts of the tongue and all these, like, cause I haven't wrapped my head around it completely yet. I have my own hypotheses. And the cessationist talks and the charismatic talks. Like, I listened just recently on the Unbelievable podcast, and they're really helpful.
Yeah, they're good.
The mediator, I forget his name.
Justin Brierley.
Yeah, Justin. Oh my goodness. Yeah. He's such he brings atheists in, and like he is so wise that he doesn't bash the atheist, right? He's just like, he's just there nodding like, yes, you're right. You know, like, and so he gives them their due because, and this quote, this Augustine quote is in my mind a lot. Like if you, and I'm paraphrasing again, if you know who God is, that's probably not God, right? Like if you, and also the same goes for like, That's pretty much it. Yeah. For me, all the evangelical experience, all the charismatic experience, let's call it, because it's not evangelical, it's charismatic.
Right.
It's like, we're not supposed to be a logician about who God is. We're supposed to stick our heads into the heavens. Like Chesterton talks about, I really like that when he said it, I was like, you're not supposed to fit the heavens into your head because that's going to split your head open. But if you put your head into the heavens, you know, that's the point of being a believer. It's like, you got to enjoy the experience, right? And that's what consciousness is for. It's to enjoy the experience. It's to live the experience, not to try to understand it too much, you know? Yeah. So what's your take on it?
Well, I think you've got a good take in that. First of all, we might begin by assuming we're not going to now a few videos back, I was thinking through some things about what's the background of the word explain, and explain actually comes from basically to flatten.
Oh,
and so explanations tend to flatten, which in a symbolic world or Jonathan Peugeot talk or Verveke talk, kind of an axial tension. To explain is, in a sense, to bring things down, and I think in some ways try to reduce things to causes, and especially in our materialistic scientistic framework that enlivens our ambitions, that if we can explain and flatten and reduce things to causes, then we can employ them. And there's a real spirit of Sauron in that, and that needs to be resisted. So I personally, I've seen way too much in North America and overseas to believe in that miracles have ceased. I have too many friends who I know and trust. I mean, these people I trust with anything because they are that faithful and trustworthy, and they've been tested over time, and they tell me stories, and who am I to doubt? And C.S. Lewis actually is very helpful with that, like the conversation he has with Peter about Lucy and Edmund, because he says, who would you normally believe, Lucy or Edmund? And, well, mm-hmm. Lucy, of course. So Lucy says she's gone through the wardrobe. Why do you doubt her? And so there is a, there is, and I really learned this from my father. Uh-huh. He, you know, there's kind of a posture where people tell you things. And if you watch a lot of my conversations, it unnerves some people because in evangelical culture, we keep wanting to check and correct people very quickly. That's a bad move relationally. And so if someone comes on and, yeah, I talk to total strangers. Someone comes on and tells me a story. Jesus says, do not judge. Now, that's a very complicated command. But one of the applications of it, I believe, is I don't need to pass judgment too quickly on other people's experiences, other people's testimonies, other and especially other people's evaluations and judgments on things. I am not the judge of the universe, and God is. And a big part of the fall is trying to get up into God's judgment seat. So I stay out of it. And that gives me a liberty to listen. And so I think actually, if you know, all the rationalists want to say, well, it's all about evidence. Okay. Well, then let's check our biases. Because what I've seen in a lot of what we discussed here, and I'm going to send this to you, and if it's and I want you to watch it and then decide, especially because you're young, if you're comfortable with me sharing it.
Okay.
I'm only going to share it if you give me permission. But but we have a huge bias in our culture, and this is also in the evangelical churches, to flatten everything out. And to correct everything and to present things that are all buttoned down and nicely packaged out there. And especially coming from a Korean culture, you can smell the pride in that. And so
you're right.
I think we should listen to people, and I think we should take all the evidence in. And truth be told, when you sit and you look at the evidence, this materialistic naturalistic frame that is the dominant framework of academia, of in many ways the public, political, legal space, it just doesn't stand up to the evidence. The evidence is that the world is very strange, and people have experiences that they cannot comprehend, and all of our articulations of these experiences are themselves representations. And so you're best off keeping an open mind and listening. And when Christians come along and say, well, this, and this about that, you can say, fair enough. You want to sit in the judgment seat? Sit in the judgment seat.
Yeah. But
Jesus tells us to be very careful about that judgment seat, because he says, to the degree, with the measure that you use to judge others, you will be judged. And it's okay, so I am not a skeptic with respect to all kinds of things, but at the same time, I also withhold judgment, and I withhold judgment to the degree that I don't need to judge. I don't need to say whether this or that happened. I don't need to explain all the varieties of near-death experiences. I don't need to. Exactly. I don't need to do that because I can't. So I listen to your story, and I take it as I hear it. And I think actually this posture that I've really learned from my father, because he was very much this way, and he learned it from Lewis. He was a huge Lewis fan. I have tried to practice this, and I've seen it as being a good way to go. So I recommend it.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, I have this one friend from church. He'll remain nameless. I grew out of the apologetics phase, right? I grew out of it. And there's something about apologetics that's sort of like that. It's like you have to flatten everything out. And that's exactly the evangelical part of, like, of trying to flatten things out, and so that it could be presentable for the outside world, right? And so, and so I was like, there could be a great danger of falling into, you know, Luciferianism. Like, I'm not saying
I completely understand what you're saying.
It's like if you're too high, you're gonna fall way low. You know, like you're not. It's not too good. Yeah. So that's a good place to conclude. If it's 5 minutes before, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We should probably wrap up, and I'll stretch my legs and take a drink. And I've got someone at the top of the hour. So.
It's in the morning there, right, in California.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost 10:55 a.m.
Oh wow! I love this technology. It's like,
yeah, it's incredible.
Thank God.
How do you say your name? June.
Oh, June.
Okay,
yeah.
June
Lee. Yeah, typical. Lee. Yeah, and my Korean name is exactly the same. No, there's no June something. It's a quite unique name of having a monosyllabic name. As a first name. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for reaching out and talking, and I will send this to you, and you look at it and decide, you know, there's no rush, and decide, you know, if you'd like me to share this, I'd be happy to. I think people would be very interested in it and profit from it, but it's your story, and you know, it does take discernment, you know, whether share it with someone that you trust, and say, should I share this? And like, I'd say at this point, about 2/3 more people are talking to me who very much want to have to be out there on YouTube, but still about 1/3 of the conversations that I have, they just stay private. And I'm totally okay with that because I mean, you and your story are more important than, but the thing that people have discovered is that in sharing their story, at least so far, comments have been very supportive and encouraging, and people have created friendships via this strange space. So that's been cool too. So,
yeah. You know, one thing about Peterson, he expands to let our minds be more open, right? If you're closed-minded, you become more open. If you're open-minded, you learn to be more closed-minded, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Golden mean that sort of Chesterton talks about. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Well, thank you, June. This was a pleasure.
This is a real pleasure. Thanks for talking to me, and hope to talk to you soon.
Okay. Real good. Take care.
Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye.